Good morning, Henk.
Good morning, Otto.
Henk, we are doing this wonderful series of conversations about math and music, basically trying to see how cell communications, cell cycles, organic cycles, planetary cycles are all interlinked. And you had an idea that it would be good to talk a bit about the possibility to experiment with sound, specifically to experiment with the Pythagorean comma. It would be really nice if you gave a bit of an introduction of how you imagine that, what ideas come up, and that we can later connect that with why that kind of experimentation would be needed to be done in three dimensions with a holographic way of thinking. Basically, that's how it works in our body. Please, Henk.
Yeah. So yes, the idea is just to experience how the body will change its neurotransmitters, because that's what we think we find first. After the neurotransmitters, the cells are starting to do some things we suppose. At least that's our hypothesis. For instance, we know that the octave is a very pure distance in nature, so what we are going to do is just to stretch, just for the fun of experimenting, and maybe this shows something or not. So by making the octave, let's say, 1 million of a hertz longer, 2 million or 1,000th of a hertz longer, to see how the body will respond, or how my body will respond differently towards it. What is the distance that will give the tension? What will give the relaxation? So. Likely when we stretch it, it will give some tension, and likely when we make it a little smaller, it also will create tension. And what is the...
It would be helpful if you said a bit more about what you think about, because an octave is evidently frequency doubling, which means that you go from the number 1 to the number 2. And then you say, well, we go to the number 2 in a bit or 2 less a bit. Yeah. So how would you do that, that you would have an octave which is not an octave?
So let's just give it numbers. So let's say we have a sinus wave of 1,000 hertz. So the next octave is 2,000 hertz. Then I can start producing the 99 hertz, and that will create tension in my body, I suppose. Maybe it gives a relaxation. So, oh, finally I can relax. It's just a little less than an octave. It's so relaxing. if that will be the cause, then we will have found a new relaxation technique. It's not likely that I will relax around it, but you never know. It's just a way to experience. And when we make it 2001, it's also likely that it will give tension because it's out of tune, and it stretches up. And we know from the stretching up that it always creates more tension, but to shrink it most of the time, it gives relaxation. But it's not very likely in the phase of an octave. We know that we can do this with smaller distances, like thirds, making a little bigger or smaller. Then we know that we have even a small third and a big third.
A third.
And so in this kind of distances it works. With the quint, it's the same, because the quint is just like the octave. It's still a natural tone, and I make a difference in natural tone and in artificial tones, yeah, because the quint and the octave are the real natural tones, and the rest of the tones we listen to, they are artificial. They are made by machines, not by human voice. So if the human voice is really tuned in nature, and our voices aren't tuned in nature because we have all those noise around us and all the other things, but for instance, when we just walk for two or three weeks on the beach, don't hear any music anymore, and we then start singing, then we sing a different way. Then we are completely tuned in nature. And then at least we have 32 tones in an octave. But by listening to music, we only have 12 tones in an octave. And the real natural tones are the octave and the quint. So,
yeah. Okay, I'd like to connect up with this because you're bringing on a couple of concepts which people might know. How you say, when you start with, for example, a 1,000 hertz note, and you combine it with a note of 2,000 hertz, then basically that's what you would normally find in nature. But if, for example, you artificially use a lower, higher note, not 2,000, but 1,999, or you use a higher note, say 2,001, then you can artificially create a distortion. And that kind of distortion people might know as the Doppler effect. For example, when an ambulance is coming towards you, the tone will seem higher than when it has just passed you, the tone will seem lower. And in our experiences we have the same, and we call it elation or depression. So there is a very direct parallel between our psychology of happiness and sadness, elation and depression, and the Doppler shift towards the higher notes and lower notes, which in music of course is called the major and the minor tuning and settings. Are now actually focusing in on something very important, which is that by artificial means we can actually create these distortions very easily, while in nature that wouldn't happen like that, because in nature that would happen only if the circumstances are changed, as a result of which the environment would be in movement, and thus would actually seemingly speed up or slow down, requiring an elation or a depression within us. And you already said at the starting point that we need to understand it in relationship to the neurotransmitters, to the endocrine glands, to the hormones and the molecules in our body. So you're addressing something very important here. And when you talk about these octaves, and you say, well, there's the thirds, there's the fifth, there is the eighth, and there are the 12 tones. I think it would be helpful if you could clarify that a bit, because there are many people who are aware that the octave with 8 notes is an artificial construction, that the 5 notes were based on the flute having a specific number of holes. It's also based on the frequencies in the relationship within the octave, but now you're talking about the shifts in the Pythagorean comma, which is different than the thirds and the fifths. You're actually talking about doubling and playing around with that doubling. So what do you expect that might happen when you do these doubling changes?
I don't have a clue. I don't have to, because we're going to do it very subtle and precisely. So we can also look to the pitch 999.9999999 hertz. You see that's the way that, so we can do it that so many figures after the comma, and I know that the secret of this all lies in this very very tiny distances. It's not made of this huge distance, 1 hertz or etc. There are very minor distances where the response will be of the of the neuroendocrine system. And I don't know why it is, but it's just the way it is. It responds like that. It resonates on it. And just to see what will happen and what kind of response cellular level will bring. So if we go, for instance, to the stem cell business, we know that that's uninhibited music that plays along without being able to stop. So music is nice when it stops and starts again. With the stem cell procedures up until now, they can't stop it. They can start it, but they can't stop it. And so that is also a thing that we might find something in that area that we learn more about the responses of this on cellular level. Why is it? What is the secret key or pitch or tone? I don't think it will be a pitch, but you never know. Maybe that it's there a pitch from a certain distance, and you refine it on the with 10 or 20 dots behind the comma, or 20 figures behind the comma, and maybe there is the key of getting this process stopped. And maybe it's also the key of getting it started. So
let me connect up to that, Hank, because there are two principles that you are now addressing. One is actually known in physics, and specifically better in mathematics, which is called the residue vector of frequencies. And the other is the concept of cell divisions. I'll come back to that next. The first consideration is when you have two notes that you play together, then by the interplay, there will be a higher and a lower frequency note that comes out of it. Actually, for me, that was also one of the starting points for mathemusics. Because if you have cell division and you have the cell cycle of that first cell, the cell divides, and out of that comes two cells which are slightly different, that means that you will have a cell cycle from the one cell which is slightly different to the cell cycle of the other cell. And it's precisely that what you are now addressing. And when you look at the mathematics of that, you can see that the higher harmonic is based on the difference between the two cells, and the lower harmonic is based on the additions of them. So you will have a ground note which in a way shows acoustically the similarity between the notes that you are playing, but you also will have an overtone which is related to the difference between the two. And now let me bridge between this notion of the mathematical residue vector, which means that the smaller the difference, the larger the frequency that will come out of it, the higher the note that will be to indicate that frequency difference. And when you connect that to cells, then you can see that between two cells there will be a sameness note in the lower frequency, and in a way you could say that that is the larger cell which was there before you had the two cells. And on the other hand, the higher frequency, I compare that to the thinness of the cell membrane by which the two cells are divided. So suddenly we have a very clear metaphor for combining two cells. If a cell in the body has divided, then instead of having one note, there will be two notes. They will be slightly different, but that difference will indicate that on the one hand there was a previous cell out of which both of them came. So in music we can show that there is a virtual cell shown by the lower frequency, the bass note, but also that there is a difference between the two cells, which is seen as the higher frequency, which we can associate with the membrane that divides the cell. And so what you're talking about now And when you combine that to this notion of the Doppler shift mentioned before, and this notion of mathematics of the residue frequency, the smaller the difference, the higher the significance, then you can also see how that ties in with cell division, but also how in the body all of the frequencies of the musical notes of the cells must match also the lower and the higher frequencies. And this actually was the whole starting point of the philosophy of mathemusics, that if these two notes interplay, then they will create this this sameness, this field of sameness of the ground note, and the pitch of the difference in the overtone, the frequency, higher frequency. And then when you're talking about measuring in an artificial setting, the difference between one note and the doubled note, say the 1000 hertz and the 2000 plus or minus a bit frequency, then suddenly you are able to connect that to the molecular resonances and frequencies by which the cells operate. And I'd like to ask you, because in my mind, when you do that kind of experimentation, when you have one frequency and another, and specifically when you are able to be so precise, digits behind the comma for the higher frequency, then how do you do that? Because evidently sound is something that takes place in space. And when you look at the notion of the Pythagorean comma, you've already mentioned in one of the earlier interviews that the Pythagorean comma is actually in its nature a vortex. But then I would expect that when you play with the sound, you would need to do that in a stereophonic room. Actually, in the past, I was working on a principle called soundness systems, relating sound and health in the body, precursor of mathemusics. And there I realized that you need a room where in every corner of the room, say if you have a cubic room, you need 8 loudspeakers to build the sound in the room. Like in stereo, you can create an artificial orchestra in a room. You can actually walk around from one instrument to the other. But if you want to do this really well, you need to nullify the effect of the room itself. So you need 8 more loudspeakers to cancel out the reverberations of the room. You need to get rid of the room so that you actually have an empty space in which you can project that sound. But I can imagine that when you do this with the creation of a Pythagorean vortex, you would end up with a sound singularity in the middle of the room, where with the microphone you should be able to walk around it and see if this actually has the nature of the vortex that you described. So do you have a possibility to create it in that way, that you actually have, say, a better than stereo, you have left, right, top, bottom, front and back, so that you can walk around with a microphone in that space and measure where these frequency shifts take place?
Yeah, it will be done at the Philips laboratory. So I suppose that we can make it as we want. But the point is, soon you make it more complex. It will take a little longer to build it, and then before it starts to work. And so the most simple way you can put the equipment and experience it. But I think this way to build the because I think the room need to be squared and also, but I think they even have these dome tubes somewhere. That's what I know, at least from the long lost times. But then they had another building that they also had this half a dome and the whole dome or the whole circular room. But then it's hard to listen in a circular room. So it's another thing. So long time ago, they even built these speakers that were in circular shapes.
spheres, so yes, the balls.
Yeah, spheres, yeah. They're, so to make a sphere music, and that was their idea also. But that's already from the 70s that they built it with, fitted. But nevertheless, the knowledge will be still around there somewhere, because they made a lot of things to make it more easy, and they just did a lot of arithmetic, so you can hear even by bass tones on a very high tone speaker by just putting data in it, so it's turned around, and you it creates certain overtones that my hearing is listening to as a bass line, mm-hmm. but there is no bass line at all. but our ears are representing it as a bass line. So, but that's what they did. That's what they do with their arithmetic in sound.
Yeah, and in this case, you want to correlate what happens in the sound shape with the molecules in the body, specifically the endocrine molecules, the organ glands, and as history has shown, that is what the Indians call the chakra system. The chakras are at the exact location of the major glands in the body, and as Saskia Bosman has shown, the frequencies of these hormones can be measured precisely by the method of, was it Enderlein in Germany?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to stop thinking about molecules. We need to start thinking about electromagnetic impulses, and precisely in patterns of coherent frequencies. Yeah. So what you are talking about now is to do exactly the same as what the whole project of Mathemusics is about, to realize that we cannot easily model this in electromagnetic waves, because one electromagnetic wave is very much like the other and it's very difficult to measure it. So if we can measure that as sounds instead, by shifting the waves from one frequency domain to the other, then we can actually walk around within it. Yeah, please go ahead.
So if we can reproduce it in this slow manner, because just a hertz is a very slow frequency compared to the electromagnetic business and the atomic spin, and it would be even lovely if we could reproduce it even lower than that. But we don't have a good system. Our body don't have good systems to measure and to register it. So. Our nose mm-hmm. is quite a good thing, but dogs are much better. And our hearing is quite able to say something, because we have about 10 octaves of awareness in this 150 octaves that are there to be conscious about.
Mm.
And so we have awareness in about 10, 15 octaves of the 150. But we have, with our ears only, we have already almost 10. So that's quite something compared to the one octave side we have with the eyes and with the nose. I think we can barely smell one octave. Or I have to recalculate it again to see how much octave it is, what we can smell. But dogs, they have much more octaves to smell. Dogs they can. Smell with the nose what we can hear with our ears. That's quite something compared to us.
Yeah, and if you look at it at a more fundamental level, you can see that our body cells, our body organs, the body as a whole, is a measuring device or a sensing device for frequencies. So when we talk about hearing and smelling and seeing, basically we are only measuring frequencies. So in the eye, the rhodopsin molecule is able to slow down a photon in the pigment cone of the eye purple, so that it can actually be detected and create a charge discharge, which we then call seeing something.
Yeah.
In the nose, we smell something, but in fact, we are dealing with molecular association to the nasal membrane. On the tongue, we taste something. but actually we're experiencing molecular dissociation on the tongue cells. And when we hear something, actually it is the eardrum which then resounds to vibrations in the environment. So with the eye we have photonic vibrations, with the nose and the tongue we have molecular vibrations, with the ear we have sound vibrations, and with the gut and the nervous system as a whole we have, say, physical vibrations such as of earthquakes. But in our body, all of these different frequencies of vibrations, from the photonic to the electromagnetic, actually the molecular signal of the smell is a electromagnetic wave. So we go from light to electromagnetism to chemistry to physics. All of these vibrations are then caught by different parts of our body, highly specialized for that specific purpose. And then all of it is brought together in a kind of vortex motion into the body as a whole and integrated back into the frequency spectrum analysis again, which takes place in our brain, in our heart, in our gut, and in our immune cell system. So you are now talking about getting a better understanding of what happens in the body at the level of the frequencies rather than at the level of the senses, which people have sort of put in between, but at this level in a way interfere with our better understanding of what really happens. And now you say, well, okay, in sound we can slow things down so much that we can actually play with it, while when we look in the body, we can't do that. That we
can control it with our senses and that we and our awareness. So most of the things of this 150 octaves that are there, according science, we can't feel consciously. We cannot even be aware of it. It's just there. And if you have enough radiation, you will find out a few years later that you have cancer from that. But it's hard to distinguish if there's so in the time that there were almost no cellular phones, I could feel them. But then now there are such a lot that I cannot discern them anymore. And so my ability to become aware if there's a strong source of radio waves in the area, like an electromagnetic wave oven or a transmitter. So it is now so polluted that I can't distinguish them anymore, and I don't want to distinguish them anymore either, because I get fed up from it and tired if I distinguish them.
I would like to connect up with that, because this is a place where it is very handy to immediately detoxify what you're saying. Because yes, we are being poisoned by all of this, but at the moment that within your body you can re-find the natural rhythms, and this is also what homeopathy does, if the body reminds itself or is reminded of the natural rhythms, then the body does know what is not part of that, and it can filter for it. It does not have to respond to it. So yes, it can be still there, but the body will just be able to ignore it.
So to say again, it can filter for what you say.
Yes, but the body needs to have a knowledge of what it is to be in natural harmonies. And evidently that is something that you find in nature. And so in that sense you need to be in nature enough and in a radio wave shielded bed for sleeping enough to retune your body so that it can discern between the music and the noise.
Yeah.
And actually homeopathy does that. Homeopathy selects the molecules with which the cells work. Homeopathy informs the cells of the specific molecules that they need to remember so that they know which are the signals that the body is attuned to, and as a result they are able to basically use that as a tuning fork to know that everything which is not exactly that is just noise.
Yeah.
And that is precisely what you're doing with this acoustic experiment, showing that if you do the doubling, you would have the natural frequency. If it is not a doubling in the natural setting, that would mean that you are either speeding towards something or speeding away from something. There's something moving. But if you are at rest, then it should be a doubling. And then with respect to that, you can see what happens when you do not double that. And of course, you have to be very careful when you're actually in that environment, because your body must be able to deal with that.
Yeah, I've done a lot of experiments with that, and sometimes I got a heart attack from it and that kind of stuff, but it's just also a matter of to cancel it afterwards very soon, so you can so it will not do harm you on the long run. But you really have to cancel this kind of experiments.
Yeah.
It can be quite an agony in the night after.
Henk, I would like to take up on what you're just saying just now, that you did some experiments and you got the effects of a heart attack. In yoga too, it is known that our heart attacks are the rhythms of basically the frequency shifting up versus the frequency shifting down. They start to make an interference pattern as a result of which syncopic circadian rhythms are imposed on the heart. It starts to follow that for a moment until it is washed out again, restabilized in a new configuration. Because this is what Matter Music is about, that our body is working with these frequencies, and health and disease can be gauged in frequency shifts. And this is something medical doctors need to understand, and everybody might be helped by knowing this.
Yeah. I think it's indeed very important to get this gospel across, doctors, etc. But it was a really a very very funny the first time that I did it. So then I was also playing with these specific attunements, playing along with each other with notes that won't fit, but they were very precise. And then playing on an instrument and. That night I could not sleep and I fell asleep and I woke up with a heart attack, not a real heart attack, but my heart was going 160, 200, and I was in fear that I had a heart attack, and I said, oh no, these are the results of my testing. Mm-hmm. This is not a heart attack, so calm down, it's not a heart attack, it's just the result of what you did, and maybe you found the frequencies to homeopathic curing heart attacks, and I think I found that one, but it was very funny to and I did it again, and the heart attack repeated, and I said to myself, shall I make a homeopathic remedy from it? I said, no, you won't. Just test it a little more. But it was very funny it was not funny at all. It was shit like hell, because you really think you're going to die. You just have to say to yourself, no, you're not dying. This is just the result of your neurotransmitting going wild, and you didn't canceled the experiment, and later on I canceled it, and I had just had little effects like that. So really, if you cancel it, it doesn't work like that, but you still have some let's say 10 or 20% this same effect, so there's still going on something, but it's not really a heart attack anymore, but it's just your heart goes on boom, 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 and you're just asleep and wake up, and like you had a nightmare or a bad dream or whatever.
This is fascinating. So, because this is the core of math and music, that what we experience within our body can be addressed in frequencies. Frequencies will affect our body. they can harm and heal. And what you are now proposing is to look at a very precise detail of this, at the near frequency doubling, so playing around with the experience of the octave.
Yeah.
And of course, you closer you get to that, the more the higher frequencies are actually operating at the level of the cell membranes, or actually at the molecular level, or even at the atomic splitting energy levels. So yeah, it's something to be very careful. But also, it is precisely what mathemusics is about. Now that in our body we are having these cell cycles, we have this metabolomic or the molecular organ cycles. They all operate at our different frequencies. In sound, we can model that, so that in sound we can actually, in a three-dimensional environment, measure this. And what you're proposing is to look at the measurements of the sound frequencies themselves, separate from the cells, so that we can get a better understanding of what cells are working with and working by. This was precisely what we wanted to address in this session.
And just for people who are more into music, it's a little bit playing with the major and the minor sevenths. So that's a little bit. So if you play a minor seventh, something is completely different from the major seventh. Just that wiggle between those two notes, that's actually what we are looking for around the octave. So let's see, the huge effect is a minor or a major seventh. And now we make the minor and the major seventh just around the octave, very nearby. So this is the trick we're going to address and see what will happen. But maybe we have to search around the minor seventh and the major seventh. That's the real area to look for it, what we're looking for, but we'll figure out.
By the gist of it, it seems that this can be better an experiment where you first have the microphone measuring in the room before you actually stand right within it. This is at the edge of where our body works with frequencies and frequency interplays. And the detail of what you're now envisioning to measure is the actual dynamic and the process of the Pythagorean octave. And as I would imagine, that will take place in three dimensions, actually in four dimensions, because the Pythagorean comma is a vortex, and that will be the connection between a point, a line, a plane, and a volume, because a vortex always turns inside out.
Okay.
Tricky stuff. Nice idea.
Yeah, so we maybe it's not completely healthy. I think it's not completely healthy if we do it, but we'll see what happens and what we're looking for is the effect of the major and the minor seven,
yeah.
And as you play it on your keyboard, you know what a major seven and a minor seven is. And so they gave both tensions, the one a little bit more than the other. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Then I suggest that we round off this recording right here. And as usual, I'd like you to ask to put some final wordings to it. What would be the conclusion of what we have just discussed?
I don't. It's easy to conclude something we didn't research yet. But it's curious. I'm very curious to see how it all works together and to find the math behind it. And it's nice that we can do this in cooperation with the Philips Laboratories.
High technology. Yes.
Yeah. And that's very nice because maybe you can have it on an app on your iPhone.
Retune your health. Listen here.
Yep. Yeah, so that's actually one of the ideas also about it. So that there are specific pitches that could be very helpful, like the Royal Rife and that kind of things. That idea is still there, and that you could erase Ebola by just putting a frequency in that would cancel the Ebola or the bird flu or whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah. It will be helpful. Basically, your final words lead us to a little bit of an extension on this. Because for people who don't know this, what you're talking about now is the frequency cancellation or frequency elimination of virus.
Yeah.
This is where we need to go back to the work of Roselyn Briere, who works together with Valerie Hunt. Valerie Hunt was measuring frequencies in the body. And Roselyn Briere, as clairvoyant, was able to see them. So Roselyn Briere showed that microbes live in the red and infrared spectrum of frequencies of the body, and the viruses in the ultraviolet high-frequency parts. But these frequencies only come in when the body is losing its own frequency integrity. So that means that the microbes would come in when there is already a disturbance in that area. As Royal Raymond Rife showed, he built this extensive microscope. He studied with lights in Germany and used the coating of the lenses to actually use a kind of visual Doppler effect to put frequencies onto frequencies so he could watch into the ultraviolet. And he was able to see these viral structures. He was able to measure their size, so he was able to measure their wavelength. And then he used radio lamps to produce those precise frequencies to shatter the virus, in the same way as people say that Caruso sang to shatter the wine glass. Mm-hmm. And once you understand this, you can realize that you must be very precise about knowing which virus you are dealing with and which resonance frequency they have, so that they will actually fall apart, by the same principle as by which kidney stones are, for example, shattered by sound waves. You need to do that in such a way that the communication processes of the living cells are not disturbed. So to have frequencies which you can impose on a body is not a good idea. Frequencies that you can propose to the body is always a good idea, because then the cells can be free to deal with that in a way that they can best do that.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between, say, a dictatorship and a autarky, the full democracy, that the cells are able to get the information by which they are able to know what is nonsense and what is not. And that's precisely what homeopathy does. So in that sense, Henk, what you're proposing now is the sound equivalent of homeopathy, because evidently, as Cyril Smith has explained, homeopathy works by radio frequencies which are carried by the medium of water and communicated to the living cells, which operate by forming and deforming molecules, which means that they work with atomic energies. But what they need is the information to know which frequencies are for the molecules and which are not. And so homeopathy provides the information of the molecules taken from materials in nature and then presented to the living cells. And what you are proposing now is to do that by using frequencies. And essentially that was what we were doing long time ago in the Dreamtime Healing Concert. By providing people a bath of sounds of natural frequencies in which they could tune in and resolve what was no longer part of them and pick up what could feed them.
And what I did one-on-one, so just as a test, to sing Mother Spots Away and that kind of stuff in the skin, so you could really see if this worked or not, and with me it worked quite well, I can say. And I also tried it on people with cancer, etc., etc. But then I got a feeling I got a cancer, and they were very happy that they got my life energy. So that was not the way to work with cancerous patients. So I had I didn't succeed to work that out in the proper way with cancer patients. But with other problems, it's more easy to facilitate and don't get robbed of your own energy as a therapist. So there's also a very intriguing way of working, but I found that it was also a strong attack on my own life energy, and so it was not. It didn't feel good to give away my life energy to somebody else who's dying, and just give them a few more weeks with my life energy. And
let me edit that while you propose a problem, because I can present a solution as well.
Okay.
What you're just describing is actually the art of the healer. The healer is somebody who is able to accept a problem which the patient cannot accept for him herself. So the healer actually operates like a co-processor, and it means that, yes, the healer will get that disease, but the healer is able to resolve it. As a result, like a co-processor in a computer can do the computation from the problem to the solution and then feed the solution back to the patient. So the art of the healer is that you're able to be willing to accept the problem of the other, to digest it within you, and then once you've digested it, the solution is available for the patient, who can then work with it. So you are actually the remedy. And what you're now proposing with this Pythagorean vortex is actually to look into that vortex motion, which is the basis of the digestive system by which the healer is able to resolve the problem, because that is the principle of the digestive system, by which we do not only digest food but also information. We can actually digest our past problems by that, and we actually must do that to resolve our past to be able to have a future. And the principle behind this is exactly the same as that of cell division. Cell division is a vortex movement. So the turning inside out, when the cell sort of internalizes, the matter dissolves, the molecules evaporate, and the atoms sort of seem to disappear. And then it bounces back in phase space and out come two cells, which are then phase synchronized in a bit, but also not. And that's precisely what you're now going to think about, of exploring that at the sound field in the body.
Yeah. And this is
we're now both silent. So it's just yeah, go ahead.
That's a very good conclusion. So shall we conclude now?
Okay, so we conclude here. And thank you very much, Henk, for this great idea of so fundamentally connecting the whole essence of Matha Music with this whole fundamental principle of sound, basically focusing it on the Pythagorean comma, which is a vortex, which is actually the fundamental principle of cell replication and division and digestion and problem solving. Thank you very much, and till next time.
Till next time. You're welcome. See you.
Bye-bye.